case today is Worms against Barnhart.
May it please the court, counsel. Dana Duncan appears on behalf of John A. Worms, seeking a reversal of the district court decision, upholding the decision of the Commissioner of Social Security, denying Mr. Worms benefits. The issue presented before the court is really threefold. The first issue I would like to present without regurgitating my brief is that counsel filed with the appeals counsel a decision of the Veterans Administration finding Mr. Worms disabled, dating back to a treatment for endocarditis in 1972. That decision submitted to the appeals counsel was never made part of this record. It is our contention that that evidence is new evidence requiring a sentence that's remand for the purposes of establishing the relevancy. The law in this, in several circuits is fairly clear regarding that issue, and that is that the Veterans Administration decisions are to be given some weight. The 8th and 10th circuits have already said the such decisions are to be given some weight. The 3rd and 5th have indicated great weight. The 7th circuit has examined the issue of Social Security, or not Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid benefits, state versus Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare. They determined that another agency is not binding on the ALJ, but he at least must consider such findings. Accordingly, we think that that does have some weight. The second issue before that I'm presenting is that the decision of the administrative law judge is not based upon substantial evidence, simply because of the manner and means in which he decided the case. In this particular circumstance, the administrative law judge's decision specifically indicated that he found no disability, no severe impairment within the period of the applicant's insured status. The sequential process required under the regulations required first that whether there is substantial gainful activity, then to establish whether there is a severe impairment, third, whether they meet a threshold or a listing that's in the regulations, the fourth is can they do their past relevant work, and the fifth step is considering their residual functional capacity, whether there's other work available in the national economy. The judge stopped at step two, and specifically, that is inappropriate. The regulations clearly indicate that the applicant is supposed to present any and all evidence and be allowed to present any and all evidence. The judge is obligated to present or to make a decision applying all five steps of the process. If the judge determines that there is a disability, he's then to go to the onset date and determine that given the relevant and applicable law. The commissioner has argued in its brief that the judge need not do that simply because he found there was no disability within the time frame. The only case I have found, Your Honors, is Grabnick versus Turner, an 8th Circuit decision where that specific issue was raised and rejected, and that the requirement was that they at least consider all five of the steps before checking to establish the onset date. The last step is the application of Social Security Ruling 8320. It has application for this case not only for the purposes of whether a medical expert is necessary in such a case when onset is in dispute, but that it sets the format, the framework for an analysis. As this court has repeatedly said, the administrative law judge must specifically state his logic. He must make a logical bridge from fact to his reason and to his decision. He has to consider the individual's allegations, the work history, such as the time frame in which he quit working, and the medical history. The commissioner has argued in its brief that Perkins versus Charter stands for the proposition that a medical expert, once these are established, need not be called. Indeed, that is the case. However, it is only the case when there is no ambiguity. Perkins stands for the proposition that when examining these three points, the allegations, the work history, and the medical history, there is no ambiguity, then a medical expert need not to be called. If an ambiguity exists, then medical experts are necessary. Based upon this, it is our position that that the decision should not stand, and that remand under sentence 6 on the new evidence should be granted, and that that a remand should be granted regarding the other issues as I have cited. I'll reserve any additional time for rebuttal unless there's any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Mr. Nagel. You can move the whole podium up or down. There's a switch in the right hand corner.
Oh, I see. Oh, I think it's your. If it pleases the court, Patrick Nagel, representing the Social Security Administration in this matter. Social Security ruling 8320 does not apply in this case. SSR 8320 pertains to situations where an administrative law judge concludes that a claimant is disabled and then must establish the onset date of disability. Here, the ALJ adjudicated the appellant's application for disability insurance benefits and found him not disabled. Social Security ruling 8320, which is really, in essence, the ruling that provides a springboard for appellant's argument, specifically states that a Title II worker cannot be found disabled unless they establish the presence of a disabling condition during their insured period for disability insurance benefits. In the case at hand, the appellant's insured period ended December 31, 1996. Hence, appellant had to prove that he was disabled prior to that time. Appellant has raised in his arguments the issue that the administrative law judge failed to consider the appellant's medical evidence, work history, and allegations in his analysis of the case. Even though SSR 8320 does not apply to this particular matter, the administrative law judge still took into account these factors when deciding this case. In this case, the administrative law judge reviewed the medical evidence and noted that during his insured period, the appellant received only minimal and conservative treatment for minor ailments. This shows, particularly in reference to the treatment that he did receive. He had a vasectomy and received some medication refills for some stomach pain. This shows that the appellant had the means, the ability, and the willingness to seek medical treatment when necessary. Yet, he sought no treatment for the impairments that he now alleges rendered him disabled during this time. Moreover, three physicians independently reviewed the appellant's medical records and concluded that during his insured period he had no severe impairment. With reference to his work history, the administrative law judge considered the appellant's work history and the fact that the appellant testified that he stopped work in 1991 because he was laid off from his job due to slow business, not because he had a medical impairment. Finally, during his insured period, the appellant never alleged symptoms that he now argues left him disabled. Not until June 1997, 6 months after the end of his disability insured period, did the appellant first raise the issue of dizziness, and even at that time, it represented an isolated occurrence rather than an ongoing condition. His next episode of dizziness did not occur until almost 1 year later, in the spring of 1998. Clearly, appellant's own allegations show he was not disabled as of December 31, 1996. The administrative law judge considered his allegations, his work history, and the medical evidence when he concluded that the plaintiff was not disabled. And in fact, he had no severe impairment before December 31st of 1996. With regard to the new evidence that the appellant has submitted, I think it's important to point out that the Veterans Administration decision, which is dated January of 2001, actually includes an analysis of three medical reports. Two reports were in the record before the administrative law judge and were considered by the administrative law judge. The third report was a September 2000 audiological test. This was a test that the administrative law judge was not privy to. However, when the administrative law judge reviewed the file, there were two other hearing tests from May of 1998 and October of 1998. If any test were to have a probative effect on the appellant's condition as of no later than December of 1996, clearly the two tests from 1998 would have had more of a close impact in terms of trying to determine his condition than a test from September of 2000, which occurred almost 2 years later. Regardless, none of these tests nothing contained in the report shows a reasonable probability that the administrative law judge would have reached a different disposition had he had the complete report in front of him. I also believe it's worth noting that by the Veterans Administration's own finding, the severity of the appellant's dizziness and ringing in his ears became much more pronounced not until 1997, again, after the December 31st, 1996 expiration of his insured status. Therefore, in conclusion, I'd like to argue that the administrative law judge did not apply SSR 8320 to this case because he found the appellant not disabled. And in doing so, SSR 8320 doesn't apply. The administrative law judge also did not call upon the services of a medical expert because the medical record was complete and free of ambiguity. Instead, the administrative law judge evaluated the evidence and reasonably concluded that during the appellant's insured status period between 1992 and 1996, he was not disabled. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Duncan?
Yes, sir.
The court has a copy of the administrative law judge's findings of fact. And nowhere does the findings of fact include any reference to a finding of non-disability after the second step. The judge simply stopped. So what the argument of the commissioner is, in essence, begs the question. He's not disabled because of the fact that we can't set an onset date, but we can't set an onset date because we can't apply the rule because we're finding him not disabled. It defies, it's a circular logic. 8320 would apply only if they went through the five steps and determined that he did not have a disability. And that is the point that 8320 applies. With regard to the fact of his medical treatment history, the whole purpose, or one of the main purposes of 8320, is because of the existence or non-existence of medical records that may be out there that disappear. In fact, you'll note from the record that there were two separate hearings trying to give Mr. Wilms an opportunity to find additional medical records that he could not track down and locate. Lastly, the VA decision is new evidence. Simply because the evidence itself is based upon, or the decision is based upon, some of the evidence already in the record, it is the decision, not the evidence, that has weight and is to be considered by the court. Lastly, the issue raised by the commissioner that the VA decision finds from 1997 information is not exactly or completely correct. What it indicates is that he is found disabled going back to 1997, which is his date of filing for VA benefits. It makes the findings that his condition dates back to the 1970s when he contracted endocarditis while a member of the United States Air Force. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.